Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston sports radio, John and Lance.
John is out, but the show goes on. LZ with you, right, cha? For the full three, and Freddie D by my side.
Hey,
what's up, Freddie?
Hey. Glad to be here on a Friday morning, my man.
We're kind of murdered out today with all black.
Hey.
We got kind of a vibe going.
Well, here. Listen, man, we're dads. We're
great shorts,
you know,
dude.
Great
man,
shorts. Uniforms. Now, you went with the socks.
So these are my new. I went black socks, and these are my new James Bond shoes from Adidas.
Yeah.
Just got them in yesterday. I'm not loving them. I thought they looked better on the online.
Yeah, it happens.
So they got the white like plastic on the side.
Right.
I don't know. I'm just gonna kind of
you're rocking
wear
it.
Them around. May take them to the Galleria, see what the Galleria thinks, because those shoe guys on the third level, hey, let me clean those shoes. Like those shoe guys,
they'll keep you up to date.
Yeah. No, they're gonna let me know what's up.
Rocking your Edo hat.
Yeah,
your Kobos, so it's K.
That's right. Okay, so you know it's Kobos. So I'm supporting my man Kobos, who has supported the show. You do right by the show. The show does right by you always. And, or sometimes we do right by people and they do right by us.
Absolutely.
Like my man, Michael over at Pete's Fine Meats. But, our guy Kobos, Raul Kobos is, opening up. You know, you've seen him out at our Christmas parties. You guys who've been out there, over the years.
Active on Twitter. That's how I found out about
very
him.
Very active. He just started, he told me, I saw him at the Booze Cam party on Sunday over at Riel, that he used to come over to our Christmas parties when he was like in school, like seeing John and I, old school John and I, doing our Christmas parties there. And he just followed us that entire time. And, he wanted to be part of some stuff when he was getting his food stuff going, like, yeah, come on out. And it's just gotten bigger and bigger. And now he's all grossed up. He's opening up his spot. He passed all of his it is BYOB today. I think it's a $20,
like a $20 cover too, right?
Yeah, so it's not it's not like official.
It's all right, though.
It's not the grand opening.
It's like a pop-up soft opening type deal.
Yeah. And so this is his hat. EAD, which has made it on the show for a while. It's not a friendly term. But then he throws his flames here as the O. And so it turns into Edo, which is where it's a play on.
Which is where it's
where
at.
Where he's located. Uh-huh. So just
that?
A quick shout out to our guy Raul. I know he's pumped up about today. Congratulations and good luck. And we will be there for his grand opening. We'll be doing our show there for the grand opening today. Like you said, you work some things out. In the restaurant world, you have soft openings.
That's so it.
That you work out the kinks. Oh, this it went
and
wrong.
What a day
this
to
went
do
wrong.
A soft opening, by the way.
What's that?
What a day to do a soft opening.
Yeah, so exactly.
Right across the street?
With across the street, you got the Astros. Now, we're not. I'm not intentionally in black, and I don't think you are either, Freddie. I think that's just what we're. I'm not intentionally wearing black because the word is that Lance McCullers is going to be out of at least the ALCS, and I'm telling you now,
he ain't coming back.
He's done.
I mean, the forearm doesn't magically get better.
No, he's done. Talking to some people behind the scenes, it's a. They'll probably leave it out there like, oh, you don't know, so that if the Astros get by the ALCS, you keep the other squad guessing, but that's gonna do it for Lance. The quote I heard was Lance basically said, I had nothing, and I reached back with everything I could to muster a 95-mile-an-hour fastball to get out of the fourth, and I had nothing. Like, there was nothing left because of the arm. So that's a terrible sign.
That's a huge blow, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge blow to what these guys got going on. But I'll throw it out to you, and I know we're going to get into it throughout these first couple segments of the program about what the Astros got to do. I mean, when you've got bats that are as prolific as the Astros are, you still do have a puncher's chance. But in the playoffs, you know as well as anybody, Lance, and the folks listening at home know this, you know, your star's got a star, and then you need somebody that, you know, is that role to good dude who needs to step up and play out of his mind.
Absolutely.
Problem is now, on that pitching staff, now you need about 1.5 to 2 of those guys doing it, since you don't
probably have
Lance doing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's two games. You're going to miss out on two of Lance's games. And look, the Astros are a 140 favorite. They're minus 140 against the Red Sox. And one of the reasons is because the guy who's on the mound tonight for the Red Sox, Chris Sale, you know, he's he has a hard time going more than five and a third at the most. He gets the pitch count gets up into the 80s, and they shut him down. And remember, he came back from injury and has come back, and he was pretty solid early on, and then he's run into some problems here in his last outing against the Rays. He was really terrible. Went one inning, gave up four hits, five earned runs, a home run, which was a grand slam. Against Washington, the game before that on the 3rd of October, two and a third, four hits, two runs, two earned runs, three walks, seven strikeouts, and got to 62 pitches and two and a third. Those are his last. And then I'll take it before that, the start before that against the Orioles, five and a third, four hits, three earned runs, had a home run allowed, walk, strikeout. Look, he's still punching people out.
That's the Orioles, though.
But that's 85 pitches in five innings. Yeah. Like his pitch count, the Astros, if they take their typical measured approach at the plate,
right,
and if they do what they've been doing this postseason, he'll be out of there within the first five innings. You get to their bullpen. And, you know, regular season, the bullpen, the Astros were 4.06. The Red Sox were 3.99, but the Red Sox are having some problems right now, and they're using their starters. Here's what they're going to do. They're going Chris Sale game one. Astros are going to Fromber. The Astros are now going Luis Garcia game two because he's substantially better. An ERA in the twos, I want to say like a 2.96 in that neighborhood, an ERA in the twos when he is at home versus when he's on the road, and he has a his road split. I'm trying to bring it up here because I actually have him right here. I have him broken down. Here's what Garcia looks like, his home and road. On the road, Luis Garcia is a 4.24.
Okay.
At home, he's a 2.73.
Night and day.
So
must be those trash cans is what it is.
Yeah.
The banging gets louder.
Yeah, no, it's got to be.
He can kind of lock in.
It's got to be the trash
cans.
Exactly. That's what people have been saying.
Yeah. That's what
people have been saying.
To.
Like,
yeah.
You cheat. Somebody yesterday had a tweet about that known cheater, Lance McCullers. And somebody said, so explain how he cheated again. And there is no response from the person on Twitter. But here's let me get James Click in here, because James Click, the Astros general manager.
JC?
Yeah, he addressed LMJ and his MRI yesterday.
Just a forearm tightness, but obviously anytime you got a pitcher coming out with a forearm anything, you want to take your precautions and just make sure you know exactly what's going on. So he did go for an MRI, just precautionary, just to make sure everything's okay in there. So we're waiting for those images to be reviewed and get an examination on him, but we'll see where that goes.
And listen, Lance is a guy who has had previously a Tommy John surgery and I don't think that's going to be the case this time, because Lance apparently said it had nothing. The pains weren't the same, but when it comes to Lance McCullers right now, and there's a lot of long term potential with Lance McCullers. James Click said, "Better safe than sorry."
I mean, we're always trying to balance the present and the future. We have a very unique, not very unique, excuse me. We have a good shot right now. You don't get to the ALCS very often. I realize I said that. We're here for a fifth time in a row, but these opportunities are rare, and we need to make sure that we do everything we can to get this team in a position to try to win the World Series this year. But he's going to be here for a long time. We have to balance that against this.
Yeah, and he just signed a contract. So you don't want anything to happen where next year's involved.
Well, not to mention, I don't know.
And you hope that it's not now, but we haven't gotten anything more than Lance isn't going to pitch in at least the ALCS. But I'm just telling you, they're not pitching him this year.
No, they're not, and I was listening to what you were saying, Aaron, through the break, as far as, you know, can you pitch him? And I thought the same thing, as far as, you know, listen, I get you want to, you know, it's right now versus long term, and do you want to risk, you know, any further damage? But, you know, this isn't football, right, where guys can play through the pain,
right?
And you know, you get a shot of Toradol, and all right, go ahead and go back out there, and we'll talk to you, you know, after the game's over. I mean, unless you numb this thing, I mean, unless you know,
you'll do more
shot
damage
of Toradol to this. I don't know that it's really worth it in baseball,
that's
right?
Not.
I just don't think that's it's the same apples and oranges as far as that goes. So, man, listen, he's out. And now and I wanted to use a football analogy with you when it comes to what these Astros are going to do. Basically, your pitching staff now has to be bend, don't break.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, you literally, because again, it's basically, let's keep everything in front of us. If we can give up four or five runs a game.
You're in a cover two shell. You're playing quarters coverage. It's soft quarters. And now, okay, that's fine, Freddie. But let me also remind you this. Did you watch Monday Night Football with the Colts versus the Ravens?
going to go out in a lemon. I mean, I watched parts. I'm not going to pretend like
let
I watched
me just
the entire
tell you what
thing,
happened.
Soup to nuts.
The Colts had some injuries in their secondary and still do, and that's who the Texans take on. They have injuries in their secondary, so they played a quarters coverage and cover two coverage, off coverage, basically, with they played a soft shell, and Lance and Lamar Jackson hit him for 400 yards passing and a huge comeback for a victory. So,
but think about it this way. The Astros' bats are Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, now, that's true. Because the Colts are not the Astros' bats.
That's exactly right, right? So because the thing is that okay, so the Colts
maybe
who
Tampa
we know,
Bay is a better kind. Maybe Tampa's better because they've got all these injuries in their secondary right now.
Exactly.
A ton. Maybe Tampa's
but
better because
the
they
is,
have the firepower.
You ain't taking the foot off the gas of that of those Astros bats, right?
Like I don't
you're not going to
so.
Go into conservative play calling. Like okay, we're just you know let's
no,
just make
no,
contact. No,
no. Right.
You're going. I mean, because listen, right now you have to. You could almost argue now you're in a situation, Astros bats-wise, where, okay, yeah, you were giving us 5-6 runs. I mean, yeah, it's pretty ungodly to think you're going to put up 7-8 in the playoffs, but now that's what you're going to have to do to some extent.
I'm telling you, the over-under for this game is 8. I think it should be 9.5. Fromber has not been great. Fromber in his last three, for example, 4 1/3, 7 hits, 4 runs. 5 innings, 4 hits, 4 runs. 4 earned runs, including 2 home runs. 6 2/3. He gave up 1 run. That was good. 7 no runs. That was great against the Angels. 5 innings, 5 runs. 4 earned, 2 home runs. So this has not been the same Fromber that we saw last year. However, there have been at times during the year, we did see that Fromber.
Yeah.
We saw last year's Fromber. So Fromber versus Chris Sale tonight, and what I think is going to end up being a high-scoring game. But hopefully it's heavy on one side, and it's ours. Listen, the Red Sox just came out of scoring 11 runs in five, or having 11 home runs in 5 games in the playoffs. 11 runs. They're slugging. Their OPS is in the 900s in the playoffs. The Astros are second in Major League Baseball in the 800s. They just got done smashing. I mean, they smashed the Yankees and Gerrit Cole. They smashed the Rays. This is a team that's hitting right now. And as you mentioned, the bend but don't break is going to be very, very important. And the Astros really need the best version of Fromber that they can possibly get today. And then how they handle the bullpen moving forward, because you're going to have to, I would imagine you're sliding. I think Zach Greinke is sliding into the rotation.
He has to.
Yeah, I think he is. Before we get to a break, I want to hear from Dusty Baker. Dusty Baker is the head honcho of the team, and he saw Fromber last year, the best version of Fromber. He saw this year's version. Let's hear what Dusty says about Fromber Valdez.
I mean, he's been here before. I mean, he was our main guy last year, you know. And, you know, for a young kid to have done and been in a situation, you know, you don't find that much. You know, the last really young kid, I mean, not kid, but young man that I was around was like Fernando Valenzuela, you know. In L.A., he wasn't in all the situation. You know, I mean, he pitched far beyond his years. And I like Framber's determination. I like the fact that he's loose as heck. You know what I mean? Which would take him a long ways that you don't expect Framber to get or be tight.
That's Dusty on Framber. When we come back, we've got some comments from Tim Kirkjian. He was with the Wheelhouse. He had some interesting comments that I want to get to about your Houston Astros, not just the team, but some of the players on the team. And the National League is all set with the playoffs, but it did not happen. It did not happen without a little bit of controversy.
Well, you got that right.
So we will get to that. We'll tell you what that was when we come back. It's 7:13 right here on the bench.
This is the Bench on ESPN 97.5. The conversation continues on the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Hey, it's 7:16. Freddie and I were just talking about Succession starts.
Huh?
It starts back up this Sunday. Succession is
on. What a great show.
This Sunday, and there are no Astros on this Sunday. You have Texans going this Sunday, and we'll get to some of that as we move on. Texans take on the Colts. Bigger game for the Colts.
I'm curious to get you. Because I wouldn't mind talking a little Texans with
no,
you.
No, we will. We'll get to the Texans. You know, Chris Ballard, the GM of the Colts, is my boy. I'm good friends with him. He knows that I try to get him on the show. You know, he won't do the show. But And so I really want them
What's
to
he
do
doing
well.
Up there
when the
anyway?
Texans play the Colts, I want the Texans to win. This year, probably a little different because the Texans aren't playing for anything. Like I look at this
Drastic.
As, you know, in playoff years, stuff like that, I want Texans to win. I'm here in Houston.
Yeah.
I cover the Texans. That's my boy, though, so I want them to do well. But you know, I was getting texts from him yesterday, or we texted about stuff. We hadn't texted about Astros. Last time the Astros were in the World Series, Ballard in the ALCS, he had Monday night game. He's got earpieces in. He's listening to the Astros.
Why, is he a big Astro fan?
Yeah, he grew up here in Texas City.
Oh.
He was a track guy, white guy that could run. Fast white guy, 100-meter white guy.
Deceptively fast
is
what you're telling
fast.
Us. High IQ guy.
So Chris, he ended up going to Wisconsin towards Niza. But anyway, that's where fast
very
white
Very fast. That's a very fast white guy thing
Actually, I don't see a lot of fast white guys in Wisconsin now that I think about it, actually. But yeah,
fair
it feels
point.
Like a fast white
that
guy.
That feels
thing
like
to
we're
do.
A fast white guy's word to
but
go
he
somewhere.
But he tracked the Astros World Series the entire time. He was so pumped. And that was his first year with the Colts, but we were just going through some stuff about his team, and his team has one win. And I thought what was interesting is that he was talking about holding some of his coaches accountable. Without going into our private conversation,
did you ask him why he re-signed T.Y. Hilton again?
No, I didn't. And
would that kind of fray the friendship a little bit?
No, not at all. No, not at all. Look at that. Look at that microphone. Welcome to.
I didn't even touch it.
Welcome to 97.5, where microphones just break in the middle of segments because that'll happen sometimes, Freddie. Not at all.
It's
I can ask him anything.
Chris Ballard, right there.
Yeah, we can break balls. We can do whatever.
How dare you?
It's not a problem. I think for him, it was just about let's just keep the guy that we know we like with Carson. Let's give Carson Wentz.
We know he's only
going to
be here for three games. But
yeah, I don't. Well, he hurt the neck. He hurt the neck after they had signed him.
You've seen T.Y. in person, right?
He's small.
I mean, seriously, I mean, he's about as big as that
you
tripod
do know that
right
T.Y.
there.
Averages about 200 a game against the Texans,
well, against
right?
the Texans.
Guess who? Guess who's back this week? Guess who's back this week?
T.Y.
is back T.Y. just in time for the Texans. So, anyway, you know, he just talked about holding coaches accountable and his relationship. But the relationship he has is what I want the Texans eventually. It's frustrating because they've never had that relationship. We'll get to that. What I do see, though, is that the Astros do. Like the Astros' relationships in their locker room with their managers, it's always been great. It's always been one of those things. And, you know, Tim Kirchin joined the Wheelhouse, and he talked about Carlos Correa and his postseason. And I think right now, Freddie, on Sports Talk Radio, the one thing that generates phone calls, not a lot of things generate hot and heavy phone calls very much in Sports Talk Radio right now.
It's got to be a bit.
But you know who does is Carlos Correa and
oh,
his
absolutely.
Future. A ton of them have been coming in. Here's Tim Kirchin talking about his thoughts on what this postseason may mean for Carlos.
Just imagine if he has another great postseason. Imagine if the Astros win the World Series with him as their shortstop and he wins the MVP of the World Series, all of which is possible. How in the world are they not going to re-sign him? So I'm not counting the Astros out of re-signing Correa. I would say at the moment, it's not likely that they would sign him, but we have to see what happens over the next 3 weeks. All sorts of things could change, good or bad, for the Astros or Correa. But if he's dominant again, I think that changes the equation, and Houston is going to have to step in and say, this is a transcendent player in October. We have to keep him.
Listen. I am a believer in team building. I'm a believer in following a process. And I think ultimately, let me finish this because you may want to jump in. And I'm also talking not just to you, Freddie. Let me finish this with people who are listening. Ultimately, the smartest move is to let Correa walk if it's a long-term deal. Use that money and the other money to replenish certain positions and take a painful loss and build up. However, mm-hmm. That's the analytical, logical
that's
side.
That's the money ball way of doing it, right?
Correct. You have a value. You stay with your – and most money ball analytics-based guys, like Daryl Morey, who we saw, that's how you operate.
Yeah.
Now let me tell you what Lance, the guy watching TV and the lifelong Astros fan since I was 5 years old, thinks. It's getting to the point now where you are going to have to do something that's going to make you uncomfortable. And if Carlos is willing, and you can't go to $300 million 10 year. You can't do it. That's a dumb deal for any player in Major League Baseball. With that said,
was it a dumb deal for any player or for the team? It's for the player.
No, it's great. It's great for the player. Right. It's dumb for the team. Just too many issues with potential injury. With that said, at this point now, you have got to find a number and a way to get to something that makes Carlos say, I am willing to take less total money on a contract because I know there are tax advantages, which he brought up previously.
Yeah.
Tax advantages, advantages with where I live and who I'm best friends with.
His wife's from here too, isn't she?
His wife's from here.
Yeah.
It's a chance for him to stay with his homies in Houston and continue to win. If you can get to that, look, if it's about Carlos making the most he can, if it's about Carlos Correa being Carlos Beltran, then you're done.
That's
you're
it.
Cooked. There, you
Later.
Have no chance.
Yeah, if
there is
Fernando
no chance,
Tatis.
Especially if the Yankees, and the Yankees, when won't they panic? And that's the worst case scenario. Carlos leaves and goes to the Yankees. That's the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
With that said, if Crane can get to a 7-year number where Carlos Correa says, I will put away.
See, I'd bump it up to 8.
The total. You may have to.
He's only 27.
You may have to. Yeah.
I mean, you don't think he can still rake at 35?
You may have to. Even if he doesn't, what you're hoping for is the fewest amount of bad contract years possible. And I think at that age, I think what you're talking about is maybe 2 at the most. Yeah, I think 8 is, you know what, Freddie? I've been saying, at first we talked about 6, because
yeah.
6 makes the most
He's
sense.
Already said no to 6.
But that's not, but that's not the market rate. That's
no,
not the market
not,
rate anymore.
Not for, not
especially
for guys
it
like
is
him.
Not his position.
Not for guys like
then you
him.
Look at 7, you can extend it, give him another 30-some-odd million. Okay. The fact is, you know how cars, remember, Freddie, when it used to be 48 months financing, then
yeah.
it turned into 60 months. Now it's 72 months financing.
Yeah.
Right?
Hyundai's got 10-year warranties, for crying
yeah.
out loud.
72 months financing. Now we're at 6 years
yeah.
financing. You know why? Because it keeps the payments lower. For the Astros, it's going to be the opposite. They're going to have to go higher with their years per.
Absolutely.
But maybe stretch it to 7. You're right. It's going to be 7 or 8. If you can get to a spot where Carlos says, you know what? I get that I could make $320 million with the Yankees
yeah.
or whoever, but this amount of money, I'll never spend it in my life anyway.
No.
I'll never spend this amount of money in my life. And the Astros are giving me a per year that shows me the respect that the Lindor got with the Mets. And these are my guys, and I want to stay here. The guy would turn into, he would hit J.J. Watt status, which he may be there anyway.
I would say,
I'd say he's probably there anyway.
I was going to say he's there. I mean,
he's certainly getting better. There. But what I mean is where the city just, he can do no wrong almost.
Yeah.
And I really, really want that to happen. With that said, here's Carlos Correa talking to Mark Berman about really being comfortable with enjoying the moment.
Yeah, we were just talking about it while we were stretching. It's pretty special. These are moments that, you know, you got to remember and not take for granted. It's a special team, special organization, and, you know, we're ready for what comes next.
So, you know, I think Carlos, he won't know. Carlos, based on the interview he had in Puerto Rico, and there was a translation that was done, Carlos thinks that the Astros came with a very disrespectful first offer. It's like 6 years,
$120
million.
Yeah.
Which,
I mean,
per year. But at the time, that actually looked like an actual fair rate, and then the shortstop market went ballistic.
Well, it blew up, and, you know, I mean, come on, Carlos, you know how this game works. I mean, you know, it's not like they're going to give their best deal, their best offer. I mean, what'd you expect, 8 years, $350 off the jump? Of course they're not going to do that. I mean, Jim Crane didn't get to be a billionaire by giving out stupid deals. I mean, that's the way this negotiation thing works, and let's call it what it is here in Houston. You've never seen they've talked about it. They've never given out long-term deals when it comes to, you know, baseball guys. They've never had this kind of situation where you've got an uber talent to the extent of a Carlos Correa who's getting ready to hit free agency, and the numbers are bonkers right now, okay? And that's the reality of it. So, you know, I mean, it's you know, and it's only going to build off of this. The guy stayed healthy for the first time in forever. We've seen what he's done already. And to Tim's point, I mean, and you and I talked about the pitching situation here in games 1, 2, and the rest of the ALCS, because let's call it what it is. Lance is out for the duration. This is where if Carlos Correa comes in and mashes and does what he's been doing, all right, I'm with Tim Kirkjian. You're going to have to throw some funny money at him. I'm saying you're going to have to do somewhere 8 years, $300+ million. And plus, let's call it what it is. In 8 years,
I don't. They won't do that.
You know where the salary cap's going to be.
I know, but they're not going to do that. The Astros won't do that. He's going to be gone. And it, people on Twitch, get to the game. We talked about this with Carlos. Freddie hasn't. I'm letting Freddie get his. I'm letting Freddie get his taste of the turkey leg.
Listen, you got to get, if Carlos mashes, which I have every expectation he will, he's done nothing to suggest that he won't, you got to give the guy 8 years, $300+ million. And again, listen, Jim Crane's, and he was kind of sheepishly in a little wry way saying, hey, we've never done it before, but who knows? Jim Crane knows how this game works.
Brian Caswell, my buddy Caswell says, East Tech Freeway would be renamed the Correa Flyway. Let me tell you something. We'll name whatever you want, Carlos. If you take a little, just a tiny discount, just a little, just give the people a little discount, because if you don't, then you're not going to be here. But I don't know. They still have a shot. We'll get to the actual game coming up again at 8 o'clock. We're about to break down our weekly breakdown with Greg Cosell is coming up. We're going to get to all things NFL. Maybe hit a little bit on Colts with him, but obviously there's a lot more to cover, including your disappointing squad.
My Chiefs team.
So,
yeah, because I didn't realize that apparently Pat Mahomes is the worst quarterback in the NFL now. That's all right.
Pat's slipping into some of the issues I saw from him in college. It's starting.
He's just doing too much.
Taking care of the football. But we'll get to that with Greg Cosell coming up in a second. That's Fred D. I'm LZ. We got John Granato is out on a golf course. I know that's going to shock you.
Oh.
I know it's going to be shocking.
First world problems, JG.
And happy Cobos Day. Our guy, Cobos, opens up his restaurant today. It's at 1 o'clock, so if you want to get out there, just follow him on Twitter. You can get the information. 728 right here. Coming up next, Greg Cosell from NFL Films. Don't go anywhere.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Time to talk some NFL with NFL Film Zone Greg Cosell on the bench. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
7:32, it's Lance and Freddie D, and we're going to take you the full way. We've got coming up at 8:30, we have Robin Lundberg, who is a writer for SI Now.
Isn't he the guy from Office Sports Space? Illustrated? Was that
no.
Bill Lundberg?
That's
that
Bill.
Was Bill.
Yeah, it's Bill. That was Bill. So we'll talk to him about... he had a very interesting Astros article, and not the type of Astros article you're used to seeing. But right now, we're going to swing it to the NFL. We've had a lot of playoff talk up to this point. Now we're going to get to regular season, and that's the NFL, with Greg Cosell from NFL Films. And, Greg, the guy sitting next to me right now, sitting in for Granato, is a big Kansas City Chiefs fan. And, of course, you know, I wrote up, I've taken a lot of crap, and I own it, and I eat it, and I don't mind it for my write-up of Pat Mahomes, and the reason is this. I think I nailed my write-up, I think, was pretty good on Pat Mahomes.
You're talking about when he came out?
Yeah, when he came out.
Yeah.
My comp on him, and I've taken crap because of my comp. My comp was not meant as necessarily a slam in 2017. It was meant to represent the way he played football, and I comped him to Jay Cutler because Jay had elite arm talent, but Jay also didn't always take care of the football and would throw off platform unnecessarily and some things like that, and that's why I said, okay, he reminds me of Cutler. It wasn't meant to slam him. It was meant to recognize how I think he played the game. That was my comparison. He played, you know, he's been phenomenal since then, and people have hammered me about that comp. But now, at this point in the season, you're starting to see some of the things that he had in college where he didn't take care of the football quite as well as he could have. And I was wondering what you've seen so far in all 22, if that's an accurate assessment or if there's more to it that's going on.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I remember being at the Combine the year he came out, Lance, and I know you're there as well, and speaking to a number of offensive coaches who we would all greatly respect, okay? And a number of them told me that they're nervous about taking Patrick Mahomes because they just don't know if he's going to run their offense. Because you know how hard these coaches work. They work 16, 17 hours a day, and they want the offense executed the way that they structure it and the way that they game plan it and the way they practice it. Now, obviously, with what Mahomes has accomplished up to this point, people, you know, laugh at that. Once you have access to the results, as we know, everybody's a genius. But you have to make those decisions beforehand. Now, I would say this about Mahomes. There's a lot of factors involved here. I think right now he's playing a little too much outside the structure of the passing game. And he at times leaves the pocket prematurely. And he's so good at making plays when he does that we lose sight that that's probably not the ideal way you want to play. Now, right now, their pass game's out of sync. There's not any rhythmic feel to it. It's becoming a little more and more random. I think that what's happening, too, is one thing I've noticed is teams are playing two-man coverage against it more so than you would think. And the reason that I think that's effective is the Chiefs always try to run away from man coverage with speed. That's their answer. And that's much easier to do versus single high. When there's two deep safeties, there's not enough as much space to run to. Now, Mahomes is great, and Andy Reid has been around the block. They will figure this out. And my guess is they'll probably bounce back this week against the football team. But right now, they're struggling a bit, and Mahomes is struggling a bit.
No, they really are, and Greg Cosell, glad to finally talk to you. I've listened to you for years. But here's the thing that from a Chiefs perspective that I can't quite wrap my brain around, and people are going to scoff at this, but this offense, and this goes back to even last year, and I get it, they do the big plays, and Tyreek and Kelce are two of the best of what they do in the world, but this team hasn't been the same, or this offense isn't the same without Sammy Watkins, right? And I know they went out, they tried to go get Juju this year, they tried to go get Josh Reynolds, that didn't work out. This offense, without a guy that plays that possession-type wide receiver, that can be that guy that's underneath, it just seems like, as you alluded to, and anybody that's watched the Chiefs this year, this offense seems off. And I'm kind of curious as to, you know, I understand why you bring in Josh Gordon to a point, but I don't know that he really fits what this offense is, what's ailing this offense when you look at what, you know, a guy like a Sammy Watkins brought to this team.
Yeah, I mean, you can always make the point about certain kinds of receivers being helpful, and there's no doubt about that. You know, this offense has really thrived on just Mahomes' ability to make great throws, and Andy Reid has always been really, really good with route design, but most of that occurs versus zone. He's really good versus zone. You know, as I said, versus man, they want to beat you with talent, and they want to beat you with their speed. You know, Hill is as dynamic a weapon as there is in the league, and why is he dynamic? He's dynamic because of his speed. He runs away from people, and when that doesn't happen, that becomes a little more difficult. So, you know, like I said, I think they'll figure this out, but the way the game is coached, it's coached to play within the structure. We get so enamored with the guys now, you know, throwing off platform, all that kind of stuff, you know, and I think we get a little too enamored with it. You know, look at Tom Brady. Look at why Lamar Jackson had his best game as a pro on Monday night against the Colts. It doesn't matter who was playing in the secondary. It was the manner in which he played the position. You know, at some point in time, you have to play the game as a quarterback within the structure of the offense. And Mahomes is certainly capable of that. I mean, he's a high, high-level talent. But I just think they need to get back to that.
Greg Cosell with us from NFL Films. Speaking of getting back to things, what do you make of – I watched pretty intently the Ravens game against the Colts, and it is really interesting. Lamar Jackson starting to pop into MVP conversations again. The Ravens sitting here with one loss. Fact is, Ravens could easily have losses against the Chiefs, the Lions, and the Colts.
Right.
I think that is – that their record is not indicative of the team – that they are. I think Lamar Jackson is passing much better. I think the Colts played a really soft shell that did way more harm than good to their chances of winning. But I think the big concern, Lamar is definitely throwing the ball better. That defense, that's more name than game right now. They are not the same defensive unit.
No, they're not. And they've had injuries. This past week, Jimmy Smith was playing safety. I'd be very interested to see what they do this week because Averett really got torched playing right corner, and they're playing the Chargers with two big physical wideouts. It would not surprise me to see Smith go back to corner and match up to either Keenan Allen or Mike Williams with Humphrey on the other side. But no, their defense, you're 100% right. They're not as effective with their pressure schemes. Which I think that, you know, it's funny how certain players really are factors who people don't really think about. Like Deshaun Elliott, to me, and I remember when he came out of Texas, and you know, Lance, you and I watch a lot of college tape.
Tight
and,
hip. I didn't like him when he came out.
Well, no, every once in a while we get one right. We get a lot wrong. That's human nature. You know, we get a few right here and there. And I remember thinking to myself that, hey, this guy, if you just look at him traditionally and conventionally, I don't think he has great traits. Right. But I thought to myself, okay, how would someone see him in the NFL? And I thought to myself, you know, he can maybe be a dime player. But in the context of their defense, and he did not play Monday night, by the way, he was injured. But he is really effective in Wink Martindale's defense because he is a blitzer. He plays really well near the line of scrimmage. He's aggressive. You know, certain guys fit certain defenses really, really well. You know, it's like Jamal Adams. The way that the Seahawks are playing defense right now with heavy zone, heavy shell coverage, that's not what Jamal Adams is. So he's almost out of place in that defense, and therefore he's not an impactful player. So, you know, they have certain guys who are really important to them in Baltimore. I think Elliott's one of those guys, and he was out the other night, and their defense did not look very good the other night.
No, you know what's funny? What I wrote up on Deshaun Elliott, tight hip, terrible. I just said really struggles when he's got to flip his hips and run.
And they don't really.
So you know what they do?
That.
They said, hey, you know what? Let's just play him downhill.
Yeah.
Let's just get him playing downhill. And you're right, Greg. It's so important to put players in position to succeed. You don't ask them to play in schemes. You don't draft a guy to play in a scheme that doesn't make sense.
Another Texas product is Adrian Phillips, who my guess is you probably had evaluated in a somewhat similar fashion, and he's a critical piece of Bill Belichick's defense and has been for the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. He wasn't even that big a factor in college. He just turned into a player late. That's Greg Cosell. When we come back, we'll get into more NFL games with Greg from NFL Films. And you know what? If you guys have a question about your favorite team, no matter who it is.
I've got a Davis Mills question for him.
All right. We'll jump in with Davis Mills. I don't know why you'd do that to a human, but that's fine.
No, because I think Greg is going to validate what I got to say.
All right, that's fine. 713-780-3776. It's Greg Cosell with NFL Films when we come back after this.
You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Talking a little bit about Lance and Fred Davis here, Freddie D. We're talking about football with Greg Cosell. We were just talking a little bit about Mac. I think Matt Corral is going to be the first pick of the draft quarterback from Ole Miss. I don't know that it's going to be to the team who finishes last, because if it's Jacksonville, clearly, you know.
Yeah, we know they're not.
And if it's Jacksonville, they might sit tight and try to draft Thibodeau out of Oregon. But that's obviously, we have a long time before we get to the draft process. But
remember when Urban was going to get fired and then those emails came out? God, was there anybody more relieved by those emails than Urban Meyer?
No.
Hey,
how about that, Greg?
Hey, Lance, let me ask you a question. Have you watched Thibodeau already? Did you watch him from last year?
I watched a little bit from last year. I think he's got to get stronger as a rusher.
Funny you say that, because I watched all five of his games this summer from last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think his game is built more on power. I don't think he's a flexible player.
No.
I don't think he's a bender. He reminded me of Jadeveon Clowney.
Yikes. Oh, that's not good.
But Jadeveon has an incredible inside move.
You know, for some, that might be wonderful. For others, it may not. And I'll tell you why. Because I know Clowney was the number one pick, and who knows, maybe Thibodeau is the number one pick. I can't speak to that. I don't have to do, you know, mock drafts like you do, Lance. I don't worry about that.
Oh, they're a delight. You should look into them.
Yeah, yeah.
They're so much fun.
But the point I'm making is Clowney was obviously a number one pick, but Clowney is not an edge pass rusher in the NFL, and teams have found that out. He's with his fourth team and he's under 28 years old, and in fact, in Cleveland this year, when they go to their sub fronts, they move him inside. That's what Houston did when he was with Houston. That's what teams have finally understood about Clowney, is he's not an edge player because there's no flexibility to his game. Mm-hmm. And I need to watch Thibodeau more, obviously, but I did watch all five games that he played, or it was, I don't know, he played more than that, six, I think, last year, something like that, maybe seven. But I watched them all. And I just didn't see the kind of flexibility in Ben that you automatically think, great edge pass rusher.
No, and that Ben, and that's why, and when you don't Ben well, you also can have a hard time converting speed to power because you you lack that leverage. So there's a lot of things that play into it. But now I haven't looked at him closely enough. But, you know, it's funny. I had not a bet, but an old coach. I don't know. You might know Tom Pratt. Tom Pratt was with my dad over at the Cardinals.
Yeah, wasn't Tom Pratt then with the Bucks at one point?
He was with the Bucks at one
point. Yeah, no, that's where I met him. I don't know him real well.
No,
well,
he's
personally, but
great.
I mean,
he was
a
Super Bowl one. He was on the staff of Super Bowl one. Yeah, that's how long Pratt has been around. But he is razor sharp. Yeah, he's razor sharp. He was on the staff with my dad with Bruce Arians
smoking heaters at halftime.
They had my dad and Pratt and Coach Moore. So they had Tom Moore. So they had an older staff, but a really good staff. And he just said, look, Lance, I usually agree with a lot of what your write-ups are, but I just don't see it with the Oway kid from Penn State. He had no sacks. I don't see an instinctive rusher, and I didn't either. But when you are 6'5" and you run a 4.4 40 and you have a 42-inch vertical
good
and you have
God.
Bend, you have bend and you have every physical trait, Greg, I'm just a believer that if you have guys who walk the earth that look like that and can do those athletic things, you can coach up the some of the pass rush elements that you need.
Right.
I mean, some of it needs to be there clearly to end up in the first round.
Yeah.
But I want to see those traits.
You get into that conversation, and I've talked to a lot of people about this, and people have a tough time defining the word. It becomes a word that everybody uses and nobody defines. They say, well, he's got instincts, and we say that about every position. Oh, as you talk about pass rush, you may say, well, he doesn't have pass rush instincts. What does that mean? A linebacker, some say, oh, he's got great instincts. And, I've asked a lot of people what that means because I don't use that word. And it doesn't make
can
me
I
any
tell you
smarter
what I think
than
it means,
anybody
Greg?
Else, but I don't use that word because it needs to be defined.
Can I define it for you?
Sure.
I'll tell you how I see it because I understood what he meant based on
and
what
I
had seen.
I think we do as football people, but I don't, it needs to be defined when it's said.
Yeah, exactly. I think that for me, instincts are when you head in a certain direction, it's basically like a boxer, like a counterpuncher to me. That's what instincts are. When you have a natural ability to be reactive instead of a thinker, and I think there are certain pass rushers that I've seen over the years. A really interesting was Duke Ejiofor, who was, he's had two ACL tears. He's out of
Forest product.
Yeah. Wake Forest kid, yeah. I remember him.
And he was a very highly instinctive rusher.
He flashed early, too.
No, he did because he was he had great hands and he was a very instinctive rusher where if you did something to him, he immediately he had immediate reaction like a counterpuncher and could go to something else. And a lot of times the best athletes are not going to be the most instinctive players as pass rushers because they don't have to be. And Jadeveon Clowney, for example, who was a really explosive get-off guy, never developed his game as an outside pass rusher. Everything is inside move, inside move, inside move.
No, and I've heard like the linebackers, I hear people say, well, they mean key and diagnose. Well, I think if you talk, my guess is if you were to sit down and talk to Luke Kuechly, who obviously was a great, great linebacker, he would probably tell you that he could know what was going to happen based on formation, based on where the back was lined up, based on how he saw the guard, with his hand in there. He'd give you 10 reasons that lead to people to say he had great instincts, but he saw all these things based on study.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there are some guys who, you're right. You're right, Greg. And I think the preparation leads to the instinct. I think that there's a great conversation to be had about that because there is a feel, a spider sense that you may get, but probably it's come because you watched a lot of tape and you just subconsciously recognize something.
I mean, I remember sitting in my office, a number of years ago with Jeremiah Trotter, who I've got to know well. He actually lived, I don't know if he still does, he lived in the same town where NFL Films is. And I remember sitting here watching tape years ago, and he would immediately point out five things with the offense with every play that came up, like immediately, And then that's film study. That's preparation. That leads you to be able to react at the necessary speed. Some guys don't study like that, or some guys don't pick it up like that. So it leads to what we then describe as instincts.
Proper preparation prevents piss poor performance. At least that's what they told us in the Navy for
all
those years.
Well, Chuck Knox used to say that all the time.
There you go. Let me ask you this, Greg. When you look at, and John McClain, he's been doing this a long time. I was listening to him last night talking about the Texans, and
he brought up that in his 40 years of covering this football game, and I'm sure you're in that wheelhouse as well, he's never seen a quarterback bounce back the way Davis Mills did against Buffalo, where he looked like complete dog you-know-what, to playing out of his absolute mind against arguably the greatest coach in the history of football. Where do you rank right now? Where are you at on the Davis Mills meter?
You know, what you said is 100% true. I mean, you could look at it two different ways. I thought that the Patriots defense played cover one about as poorly as I've seen them play it, because that's their foundation. But that takes nothing away from Davis Mills. I thought Davis Mills was really effective. I thought he was poised. He was composed. I thought they did a really good job helping him with what they did from a game plan standpoint and how they approached it with quick game, with defined reads and throws. But the thing that Davis Mills has going for him, for instance, something that Jalen Hurts doesn't have going for him, is Mills is a natural thrower of the football. And when you're a natural thrower, that can make up for a lot of inconsistencies as you're working through the process, because he's just an easy thrower of the football, and he's got an easy delivery. There's no wasted motion. So as he learns what to see and how to see it quicker, you'd have to say he's got a chance. And he's not immobile. He's not going to make his living running around, but he's not a statue. So I thought he played really, really well, but I thought they did a really good job in defining things for him so that he could play with decisiveness and he could get the ball out.
Greg Cosell from NFL Films with us. Before we let you go, I want to get a question in that came in. Actually, let's get Brandon in. Brandon wants to talk with you about the Cardinals and Browns. What's up, Brandon? You're on with Greg Cosell.
Hey, Lance. How's it going, man? Love the show. Greg, I always appreciate the time, too. Always answering great, great football insights. Now, I guess the question, Greg, was just being a huge Arizona Cardinal fan here living in Texas, too. Love the way they played through the first five games. Last week was kind of a beat-up game for him, sustained a lot of just injuries. I know Max Williams is on the IR. He was playing some good football there from the tight end position, blocks, and you're going out running routes and catching passes. I know D-Hop's been a little banged up, and, of course, Kyler limited in practice this week. How do you see this game versus the Browns and, I guess, their season going forward? And I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, last week was an interesting game because Kyler Murray didn't really make any of those special second reaction plays. He made two, and normally we see more than that. I think they're doing a lot of really good things, Brandon, as far as their use of formations, their use of personnel, their shifts, their motions. I think they're starting to increase that. They're getting more involved. And he's really, he's not a gimmick player. He's kind of a package player. He's a specific kind of player, and you have to do certain things with him. I think that the Browns, they could be potentially missing Chubb and Hunt this week, from what I understand. I know they haven't practiced up to this point. So I don't know if that'll change the way they play, because their offense is built on the run game to start, and then everything works off that. But missing Chubb and Hunt against a Cardinals defense that struggled versus the run, that could be where the big factor in this game. But I like what I see from the Cards offense. I think Murray is a much better thrower this year from the pocket. And for all his special plays outside the pocket, I think that's where he's shown his most improvement, and that will lead him to become a really higher level player, you know, if he's to reach that level.
It's amazing that everybody who takes a step up in any sport as a quarterback, it's when they learn to work from the pocket. And
without question,
it's cliched, but it's the reason Lamar Jackson had a lot more success against the Colts, because Colts did a great job of kind of hemming him up from a running standpoint, and he beat him from the pocket. And I think Deshaun Watson made his best strides when he was working from the pocket, and it's something that it's not a given that it will happen, but if it does happen, you start to see defenses have to really alter their game plans. And ultimately, Greg, as you know from watching the tape, I mean, it's always a chess match. Who is on the defense and who is on the offense? And if you can get the defense on the back foot instead of the front foot, then you're in good shape as an offense. You don't want them playing with their ears pinned back.
No, and that's why teams that throw it so much, you know, and it's funny, I came in this morning and watched the Eagles offense and from last night, I just ran through it, and they're building everything they do solely on Jalen Hurts. Now, one can have a debate on that, but they don't run the ball at all. There's no physical element to their offense whatsoever. It reminds me of what Brandon Staley said a week ago. You know, can you be a really good NFL offense without a physical element?
Nope.
You know, everybody wants explosive plays in the pass game. We know that's what everybody wants. But there's many different ways to get to that.
Yeah, for sure. Greg, we appreciate your time and look forward to it every Friday. That's Greg Cosell from NFL Films. Greg, thanks so much for joining us and look forward to it next week.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
When we come back, we'll get back on your Astros. There is some news on the Lance McCullers front. I don't think you're going to like it, but we will reset that for you if you haven't heard, and we'll break down the first couple of games of the playoffs, including tonight, Fromber versus Chris Sale. But first, I want to tell you, if you want to get there, a lot of people have been reaching out to me about, hey, what's the ticket place again? It's Simple Seats. And I want you – now, they don't have an app yet. They started up in March. It's the guy who started it, Mike, used to work for the Astros for, I think, 7 or 8 years on the business side, and he learned a lot of great things. One of the things that he saw from a major league standpoint is he didn't love the way the tickets were done, and he definitely didn't love them in terms of the way that secondary sites were using the tickets. It was there's all these excessive fees, convenience fees, whatever the case may be. It was just adding on to what your payout was. And then you had to go through multiple pages to get to a checkout. So he did two things. Number one, he said, I'm eliminating fees. There are no fees. And number two, we're going to have a one-page checkout. We're going to make it very, very easy. And this is a very clean, easy-to-navigate site. It's just Texas-based events like Longhorns, Aggies, Cougars, Dynamo, Texans, and Astros right now. That's what they're focused on, and they're doing it great. And this is where you can get your playoff seats for much less than anyone else has them for. Go to simpleseats.com. That's simpleseats.com and get your playoff tickets today.
ESPN 97.5.